This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. It's been 40 years since the Supreme Court case Roe v. Wade guaranteed the legality of abortion in the United States. Abortion rights advocates celebrated the case for ensuring a woman's right to choose, but Roe v. Wade has given abortion opponents a clear target, and while they continue to push to overturn it, they've also been working hard at the state level to restrict women's access to abortion. Now in North Carolina, three abortion-related bills have survived crossover in the legislature. Joining us now, Jessica Jones of WUNC's Capital Bureau Chief, along with Suzanne Buckley, the Executive Director of NARAL, the National Abortion Rights Action League, NARAL Pro-Choice North Carolina. Tammy Fitzgerald is Executive Director of the North Carolina Values Coalition. We contacted several legislators who sponsored those bills to talk about this, but they said they were unable to join us. So welcome to those of you who are here. Good to have you on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jessica, several bills targeting abortion introduced this session. A few of them survived. Tell us about the ones that did.
Okay. Well, as you said before, there are three bills that made it past crossover and are still around. One of them involves how abortion is taught and discussed in schools, and another would fine doctors for performing abortions. And then finally, the third would allow healthcare providers to refuse to participate in abortions if it's not something that they want to participate in.
All right. Well, let's talk about House Bill 716. Tell us about that bill.
House Bill 716 is the bill that would fine doctors for performing an abortion where sex selection is a significant factor in a woman's decision. And physicians would be fined at least $10,000 for performing an abortion in such a case. Now, abortion opponents say that this legislation protects a female fetus in cases where there is a gender bias in favor of boys. And bill sponsors say they don't have any data on whether this is really an issue in North Carolina. On the other end of the political spectrum, abortion rights supporters say that that bill is designed to restrict the use of abortions.
Well, Tammy Fitzgerald, let's talk about your group. You have lobbied heavily for this bill. What's the goal in finding doctors for performing sex-selective abortions?
Well, the goal is to prevent abortions that are based merely on the sex of the unborn child. This is a practice that is happening around the world. The United Nations has documented that there are 163 million missing girls in the world just because they are girls. And when asked about this in North Carolina, 76% of North Carolinians agree that abortions should not be performed when it is a discrimination based on the sex of the child.
Well, if that's the case, then it sounds like not much of that is going on here if 76% people say that shouldn't be the case. So how much is happening right here in North Carolina?
We don't have any measurable statistics on that. Abortion clinics are not required to keep track of the sex of the child or the children they abort. And so, but there have been six studies performed in the last 4 years that do document the sad reality that baby girls are being aborted in our country simply because they are girls.
So if the sex isn't, how do they know that? That's an interesting study.
I can refer you to the studies, but okay. They are documented studies.
So you have framed this bill as a victory for women, Tammy. Why is that?
Well, it's a victory for unborn women in the womb. This bill is about preventing discrimination against girls just because they're girls when they're unborn. We do know that it's happening, and it is just something that should not happen in a civilized state.
Suzanne, you have fought hard against this bill. What do you think of this bill and why?
Sure. I really appreciate you asking this question. Just let's talk for a second about what this is really about. This is about banning abortion, period. This has nothing to do with sex selection. It has nothing to do with gender bias. This bill and dozens like it are carefully designed to intimidate and punish doctors, threatening them with severe fines, and force them to close their doors.
Well, Tammy is saying, look, this is worldwide kind of a problem, that there's this bias against women, and if people could find out, this might hurt women. What about that?
I think proponents of this bill have rejected every measure that would have a real impact on gender discrimination. They haven't sponsored the Equal Pay Act. They haven't sponsored the Healthy Families and Workplaces Act. And they've spearheaded efforts to undermine women's health, like defunding Planned Parenthood and the Women's Right to Know Act. This bill is clearly more about opposition to reproductive options than any kind of genuine effort to eradicate gender bias.
What about that, Tammy? If you're really in favor of rights for women, wouldn't we be seeing more being done by this legislature for those women who are in the workplace right now?
Well, that argument is just a red herring. I mean, the bill has to do with discrimination against women in the womb. The Supreme Court has allowed limitations on abortion, but more importantly, the law protects women from being discriminated against, and this should especially be true when their very lives depend on it.
How does it do that?
Well, it prohibits sex selection abortions. So when women are aborted purely for the reason that they are girls, this bill would prohibit those types of abortions.
I am curious about that, though. If you don't have the data here in North Carolina, how do you know that it's an issue that needs to be addressed?
Well, the bigger point and the reality is that we do not want to be a state where this becomes a problem. We don't want to have to come back later and legislate against it. So why not just legislate against it right now?
Why not, Suzanne?
I think that it's just pretty clear from the 2011 World Health Organization has reported that if you don't take efforts to combat sex selection that are based on addressing underlying cultural and social norms, you're not doing anything but creating a greater demand for unsafe and back alley abortion procedures.
So, wait, explain what you just said. If you don't take efforts to address the cultural expectations or that address social norms, what do you mean?
That this bill doesn't do anything to change the types of cultural and social ideas that are out there that may lead to this type of gender bias. And we're not even really willing to understand where this bill is coming from, except from that it's part of this extreme agenda that's totally out of touch of where most North Carolinians are. You know, they're saying there's nothing to support this, there's no data to support this, and yet we're going to legislate it anyway. And, you know, 76% of North Carolinians think that these important personal reproductive health care decisions should be between a woman, her doctor, and her faith, and not a bunch of politicians in Raleigh.
Well, what that same 76%, according to one survey, says that the sex should not be a determinant in the decision to have an abortion.
Absolutely, but this is not about banning sex selection abortions. You know, there's nothing out there that says this type of legislation would have the desired impact that they're seeking. In fact, the data says the opposite.
I find it quite ironic that the very group that stands for women's rights would oppose this bill. This is a bill that protects women in the womb, and it does change cultural norms. Suzanne is wrong about that. The bill changes it because it outlaws sex selective abortion. So I find it very ironic that the very group that parades around attempting to look like they're for women's rights would oppose a bill like this. I don't know how you could oppose this bill.
How does it change things, Suzanne, if 76% of the state opposes sex selection as a reason for abortion? It suggests there's not much of it going on. Tammy says we don't have much in the way of data suggesting there isn't much of it. So what is the effect, do you think, of actually writing the legislation that legislates what already seems to be the norm in North Carolina? That's not why women have abortions here.
Well, if you look at the actual language of the bill, the language is very vague and very unenforceable, and it threatens doctors with lawsuits from parents. At one point, the law included siblings, spouses, guardians are all able to sue a doctor. These people aren't necessarily part of those conversations and part of those positions. And they're inserting the state directly into the doctor-patient relationship. And this is part of a national trend to make doctors less likely to provide safe care for women and make it more difficult for women to access abortion. And that's what this is really about.
You also said that not only does this not protect women, but in fact it could lead to racial profiling. How?
Absolutely. There are a number of organizations that spoke up, and I'm sure Jessica can recall this, at the committee hearing that said, you know, they had folks, I believe your colleague from the National Right to Life said that this bill, you know, was that they introduced this bill because of the increase in immigrant population. I mean, what is this bill really about? Is it really about gender discrimination? We're just saying, look to who's sponsoring this bill and who's not sponsoring efforts like the Equal Pay Act that are very clearly designed to make life better for women.
Jessica, were there people defending this bill on the basis of limiting immigration to the United States?
Unfortunately, I was not able to go to that meeting, but I do know that it was packed and that there were so many people in there, and you know, there was a very heated debate about it. I do know that.
Tammy, you were about to say something.
Well, no. The purpose of the bill is just what the bill states. It's to prohibit sex-selective abortions. It has nothing to do with immigration. Again, that's another red herring. And to bring up all these other issues about women's rights in regard to this bill, those are irrelevant. They have nothing to do with this bill. The bill is straightforward on its face. And what it will do is protect unborn women from being discriminated against just because they're girls.
We're going to take a break right now on the state of things. So we're talking about anti-abortion legislation in the state legislature. Jessica Jones is WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief. Suzanne Buckley, Executive Director of NARAL, Pro-Choice North Carolina. Tammy Fitzgerald, Executive Director of North Carolina Values Coalition. We'll take a look at what happens to restricting insurance coverage for abortion and what may happen in the classrooms. You're listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. It's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Today, talking about anti-abortion bills on the table in the North Carolina State Legislature. Jessica Jones is WUNC's Capitol Bureau Chief. Tammy Fitzgerald, Executive Director of North Carolina Values Coalition. Suzanne Buckley is Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice North Carolina. And joining us now is Erica Levy. Dr. Levy is a practicing OBGYN in Chapel Hill. And full disclosure, she is married to one of our producers. She also testified before the state legislature on some of this legislation. Welcome to the program, first of all. Good to have
Thanks
you here.
Thanks so much for having me.
So you were a practicing OBGYN, and you testified in front of the state legislature about the sex selection bill and how it would affect your practice. Tell us, what did you say?
Sure. So for me, and from my perspective as a practicing physician, the way that the bill is written, it is just completely unclear to me what I would need to do and what documentation would be necessary in order to be compliant with this law. And in fact, it's not clear whether I would now be required to ask every single woman that I took care of who was seeking an abortion why she was choosing to have that abortion and whether or not the sex of the fetus was a significant factor in her decision.
Is there a way to tell? I mean, it seems to me, Tammy, let me ask you this, because if I knew in the state of North Carolina that it was against the law to make sex selection the cause, and that's what I wanted to do, I would simply lie about it. Aren't women going to just lie now that if this law were to pass?
Well, the bill itself says the duty upon the doctor is only when the doctor has knowledge or an objective reason to know. So I do not believe that requires the doctor to ask questions. This is a legal standard. It's established by precedents, and there are many other areas of the law where this language applies, knowledge or objective reason to know. So Dr. Levy's fear is very unfounded, I think. I think it's very clear that it's only if the doctor knows or has an objective reason to know that the woman is there for an abortion because of the sex of the unborn child.
Which takes me back to my original question. Wouldn't I just lie if that was the reason?
Well, I don't think most doctors are not going to know.
No. I know that. But, I mean, the practical effect of the law seems to be nil, zero, because if I were to abort the fetus because I didn't want it to be a boy or a girl, and I knew that was the law of the land, and I saw Dr. Levy, I would never say that to her. And so 100% of those who want to abort their fetus for gender reasons would go ahead and do that because they wouldn't tell.
It's very possible, but it's very possible that it might even limit the number of women that come in for a sex-selective abortion. That's what it should do. That's what the law is inclined to do. That's what it's designed to do, is to encourage those women who would abort their children just because of the sex of the unborn child not to do it.
I also just want to point out a few other kind of medical realities around this issue. 93% of all abortions occur before the sex of the fetus can even be determined. In the very small percentage of abortions that take place far enough along where the sex of the fetus can be determined, oftentimes those abortions are happening because of a diagnosed fetal abnormality or because of the medical condition of the mom. And I have had many women that I take care of in those particular circumstances who are facing highly, highly desired pregnancies where they've, where unfortunately there's been a diagnosis of a lethal fetal anomaly in that particular pregnancy, and the woman and her family have made the very difficult decision to terminate that pregnancy. And they oftentimes have asked me in those cases whether or not I can tell them whether or not this is a boy or a girl child that they are aborting. And it is a really important piece of information for them. It allows them to grieve appropriately and to get some closure on that situation. And again, from the way that this bill is written, it's not clear to me whether or not I would be able to provide that really important and valuable piece of information to my patients in these really tragic circumstances.
Well, it also, yeah, I mean, it also raises the question, if they asked you that question, does that lead you to believe that that was at the root of their reasoning and therefore you couldn't, would you be liable if someone even asked you the question? Because that's a clear suggestion that gender's on their mind.
And Frank, I think you just hit the nail on the head. I mean, all of these questions are going to the fact, what is this bill really about? Is this bill really designed to legitimately address concerns about gender discrimination? Or, like Tammy said, is this about restricting access to abortion, making people less likely?
I don't think
in
I
her
said
mind
that.
To
I think you're putting words in my mouth.
Well, I do think you said that it would have the effect, because I asked, won't they just lie? And you said, well, it'll probably have the effect of having women go and have fewer women will have abortions. That does sound like that would be your goal.
No, that's not what I said. I said women who will go to have an abortion just because of the sex of the unborn child will hopefully be inhibited from doing that. Not that all women would not seek an abortion. The language of the bill says that sex selection must be a significant factor in the decision of the woman. And so Dr. Levy's comment while ago about some sort of fetal abnormality, if the fetal abnormality is the reason for the abortion, that removes any application of this bill to the abortion situation. So I think, you know, all the fears that have been expressed here are really about limiting this bill, because they're afraid that it will limit access. And that's just not true. It's going to limit sex selective abortions, which the majority of people, by an overwhelming majority in North Carolina, think is just wrong.
Let me ask you, Dr. Levy, what this does to the doctor-patient relationship. If there is a topic that may be off limits owing to the fear of a lawsuit and fines and penalties, what does that do to the doctor-patient relationship in this case?
That's a really important question. So this law definitely infringes upon the doctor-patient relationship, and it limits my ability to provide confidential counseling to my patients. And it does force me to police the actions of my patients, which as a physician is something that I am not comfortable doing. It is, you know, my role as a physician is to be able to help women understand the risks involved in whatever decision they are trying to make and to make the best decision for them and their family at that time.
Let's move on to some other legislation. Jessica Jones, one of the other bills that has made it and passed crossover is House Bill 730. House Bill 730, what does that do?
House Bill 730 would allow any healthcare provider to refuse to participate in an abortion because of moral objections. And so that means that if a woman would go to a hospital desiring an abortion or to a clinic and, you know, one of the healthcare workers or that hospital could refuse to perform that service even if the mother's life is in danger. That's one thing that many people have pointed out. And another part of it is that it would also prohibit any insurance plan under the state health insurance exchange from including abortion coverage.
So, Tammy, now you have characterized this bill as conscience protection. Why do you call it that?
Well, because it allows other healthcare workers besides just doctors and nurses who are currently allowed to have conscience protection, it expands that right to other healthcare workers. That's the first section of the bill. The second section of the bill basically allows the state of North Carolina not to be the to refuse to be a conduit for abortion healthcare coverage. This third section of the bill allows taxpayers in North Carolina to refuse to use their taxpayer dollars for abortions. And so it's about conscience protection for the taxpayers and for other healthcare workers in North Carolina.
Well, let's talk about, Suzanne, the healthcare workers part of this. If a healthcare worker, doctors and nurses right now, are already covered under a similar provision, but if any other healthcare provider didn't want to participate in an abortion, I mean, shouldn't that be their right?
Well, let's be clear about what this bill actually says, because it is much more broad. It includes, you know, any services related to performing an abortion, and it limits women's access to honest information and real medical services, and can be very dangerous. As Jessica pointed out, there's no emergency exception and there's no referral requirement. So, for example, in New Jersey, you know, there was a patient who came into a hospital. The patient was refused information. She was refused blood pressure testing. The person at the front desk even refused to enter her name into a computer. I mean, this is an extreme and a broad refusal clause that would have real impact for women and can be very dangerous to their health. And there's just no, you know, there's no exception for an emergency. There's no requirement for them to refer to someone else, or for someone else in the hospital, in the pharmacy, to have to fill that prescription for that person or to offer that person medical services.
Tammy, that sounds dangerous. If you have limited staff, somebody comes to the emergency department and staff is limited, should there not be an exception?
Well, I think you're talking about a very small number of cases. In most cases, abortion is an elective procedure. It's something the woman contemplates prior to having it done. And so there are very few emergency cases. But the whole point here is that doctors and nurses are already provided this exception. And we're talking about a constitutional right of conscience. The North Carolina Constitution has a specific provision that allows for rights of conscience. Our First Amendment to the federal Constitution is where our right of conscience comes from on the federal level. So this is a constitutional issue, and this is a constitutional right that should be exercised by anyone who is in the healthcare profession, that they should have the right to refuse to perform an abortion on the basis of their moral, ethical, or religious grounds. And that's what we're talking about when we talk about conscience objections.
Dr. Levy, how would this affect your practice, this legislation, as you read it?
So this legislation is incredibly concerning to me. There are circumstances where abortion is needed emergently. And when we do have limited staff and we work, you know, as part of a large team that includes not just doctors and nurses, when, you know, the life and health of a woman is jeopardized, if we cannot mobilize a team that is willing to take care of her and provide her an abortion, if that is the medical care that she needs at that time. And, you know, it is so broad that this can extend to even, you know, somebody refusing to transport the patient from one portion of the hospital to another in order to expedite her ability to get into the operating room as quickly as possible, or, you know, somebody can refuse to draw blood on the patient. And so that is really concerning. I also think that fundamentally, this seems to me to violate just some really basic medical ethics, because there is no exception. And so the first rule of medical ethics, and specifically around conscientious objection, is that no matter what my conscience says about whether or not I want to provide a particular service to a patient, that I have to refer her and to ensure that she is able to be taken care of in a safe and responsible way. And there's no provision for that. And that, to me, is just in direct violation of the basic premises of medical ethics.
And I think it also eschews the point that, you know, I know Tammy and I don't agree on this necessarily, but there is a constitutionally protected right to reproductive health care and reproductive rights, and that there has to be a balancing. And this bill just tips the scales away from patients' needs and women's health in favor of a conscience protection.
Well, let's finish that, and then I'll...
go ahead, Tammy.
Well, so what you're talking about is forcing a healthcare worker to perform an abortion. I want to be very clear about that. That's what Suzanne and Dr. Levy are advocating for, forcing someone whose moral conscience would prevent them from participating in an abortion to do so. And so that is a fundamental right. That is a constitutional right, and it overrides any right to abortion that a patient who comes in might have.
Well, but it does. We talk about the ethical standard. I think you just did, Dr. Levy, that the imperative to do no harm is the number one imperative. And we can't, you know, sort of conscientiously decide that because this was an enemy of the state, an enemy combatant, for instance, and I'm conscientiously opposed to your stand against America, that I could let you die. I mean, we do recognize, I think, in medical ethics, am I right about this, that there is a point at which your personal standard does yield to the medical ethic that says the life of this person before me is not number one, beyond all conscientious.
But not in the case of abortion.
I just want to respond. Why
is that the exception?
Because we have already in our state statute a right of conscience that recognizes that abortion is one of those cases in which healthcare workers should be able to refuse service.
Suzanne?
I just wanted to respond because I think it's a really important point about what the bill actually says. And the language of the bill says to perform or participate in medical procedures which result in an abortion. So let's just be clear about what the bill actually says. This doesn't say, you know, someone's going to be forced to perform an abortion. And we've seen in other states, like the example that I gave in New Jersey, and, you know, from testimony from doctors, that this is much broader than Tammy would have you believe.
You know, Tammy, a lot of this discussion does seem to me about the particular language here and how broad it is. And I even wonder about the principle if we look at state funding for insurance, for instance, and not allowing state funding to cover abortions. Because, as you said, taxpayers should have the right not to have their money pay for abortions because of conscience. If we extended that and those who are conscientiously opposed to war, could we withdraw our tax money that goes to fund war on the same principle?
Well, you're outside the realm of my expertise, Frank. And I, you know, I'm sitting here fielding questions from three of you. So I don't know the answer to that question. Maybe you do.
And I also just want to turn back to the abortion ban on the healthcare exchange again to talk about what the bill actually says. And if it passes, women wouldn't be able to purchase using their own money insurance on the healthcare exchange that includes abortion coverage.
Have we moved on to the second section of the bill now?
I thought we were talking about the whole bill.
Yeah.
So, yeah. And so what this would do is would deny women and families coverage that most Americans already have in employment-based health care. 90% of private policies offer comprehensive abortion care coverage. And the state would be taking this away from women, women who are paying for insurance on the health care exchange with their own money. This isn't about taxpayer dollars. This is about my right to purchase a health care plan that provides comprehensive coverage.
Tammy?
This is about taxpayer money being used to promote abortion coverage through the health exchange. 21 other states have already exercised their option under the Affordable Care Act to opt out of providing abortion coverage through the state exchanges. I can list all those states if you want me to. 16 states prohibit insurance policies for public employees. North Carolina is one of those states. So this provision just makes our public policy on the health exchanges coincide with our already existing public policy of not providing abortions at taxpayer expense.
Suzanne?
Again, I mean, I disagree. The language of the bill is clear that this is not just about taxpayer dollars. This is about what kind of insurance I can purchase as an individual with my own funds on the health care exchange.
But the health exchange is offered at the expense of taxpayers. So the health exchange itself is set up. It's a website. It's a conglomeration of health care plans that consumers can choose from. And that is set up at the expense of taxpayers.
I just think it's a major step backward for women in North Carolina. We're reversing policies. I mean, 90% of the private insurance companies offer this coverage, and we're now saying we're going to take that coverage away from women.
No.
Which is just going to force women to have less and less health care and less safe health care.
We're taking that coverage away from women under the state health exchange. Women are always free to go out and purchase their own coverage
under the
Affordable Care Act.
Well,
under the Affordable Care Act, you can get your own policy.
Let me ask you, though, that this would seem to limit, this would have a kind of a means test. In other words, for women of means, it's easier to get that kind of coverage than women of lower wealth who would have to take advantage of this kind of exchange and other publicly financed programs. So wouldn't that mean that abortion is then only available to women of privilege?
Not necessarily. There are other avenues for women to obtain abortions. I mean, Suzanne knows all the avenues because Planned Parenthood provides a lot of them.
We have time very briefly. Jessica, I want to talk about one more bill, Senate Bill 132. Quickly, what does that do?
Yes. Senate Bill 132 requires educators to teach students in grade 7 and higher to learn about certain risk factors that may be associated with premature birth. And so just in a nutshell, this bill says that abortions are a cause of preterm birth, and that's kind of where the whole debate over this bill gets started. It all centers around the word cause. Abortion rights supporters say that calling abortion a cause of preterm birth isn't supported by scientific consensus, but abortion opponents feel that it's a fair description.
Tammy, why do you support this bill?
Well, the science shows that there is an indisputable link between preterm birth and abortion. There are 137 studies reporting on the abortion prematurity link. In 2006, the Institute of Medicine published the most complete review of preterm birth, and it called abortion an immutable risk factor for preterm birth, meaning a woman having an abortion always has an increased chance for future preterm birth. And the statistics show it's about 36% higher after one abortion. So the goal of Senate Bill 132 is to educate potentially sexually active students on the risk that a common birth control method and surgical procedure, abortion, places on future pregnancies.
All right, let me ask Dr. Levy, because we've only got about 20 seconds left to comment on that.
I want to be very clear. Abortion does not cause premature birth. And the overwhelming medical evidence supports me in this. The World Health Organization, the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, the American College of Obstetricians and Gynecologists, the American Academy of Pediatrics, and the American Public Health Association have all concurred that abortion does not cause prematurity.
Thank you very much for being on the State of Things today. Erica Levy is a practicing OBGYN and the wife of one of our producers here on the State of Things, Suzanne Buckley, Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice North Carolina, Tammy Fitzgerald, Executive Director of North Carolina Values Coalition, Jessica Jones, WUNC's Bureau Chief at the Capitol. The State of Things continues in a moment. Please stay tuned.